Bringing the Healthcare Environment to the Bedside, 10 Steps to Improve the Sound Environment of Hospitals. Welcome to the Healing Healthcare Institute educational series. The objective of this series is to address issues critical to the environment of care at the bedside. Podcast offers the opportunity for you to access this series at your convenience and make the best use of your time. Each podcast is brief and can either be listened to online or can be downloaded to your computer or MP3 player for listening at a later time. Susan Mazur, President and co-founder of Healing Healthcare Systems, has been acknowledged for her pioneering work in bringing the issues of hospital noise to the front of hospital concerns. She is a well-published author, having written articles for such well-known journals as Health Facilities Management, Long-Term Living, and Health Design. She has presented white papers on speech privacy and hospital noise for the Institute of Noise Control Engineers and the 16th Annual HIPAA Summit and Privacy Symposium at Harvard University. In 2007, she was listed as an industry leader in health facilities management for her work in hospital noise by Facility Care. This podcast series, Bringing the Healing Environment to the Bedside, considers noise, lighting, and other dynamics of the environment that change over time and become the context in which care is given and recovery occurs. The first three podcasts provide an overview of the issues of the auditory environment, research that reveals the impact of sound on patient and staff outcomes, and finally, in part three, provide strategies for optimizing the sound environment. You will find a bibliography of studies referenced in these podcasts on our website at www.healinghealth.com. These studies are available on PubMed or Medline. In part one, as a result of listening to this podcast, you will be able to identify risks to patients posed by hospital noise, identify risks to staff members posed by hospital noise, and list two root causes for hospital noise.
Setting aside any economic framework or issues of for-profit versus non-profit cultures, it is safe to assume that healthcare organizations are mission-driven, ethical, and fully invested in the care of those who are ill. They attract and are grounded by staff members who have the highest competence, technology that is the best and the newest, exemplary architecture and interior design. Furthermore, healthcare professionals, nurses, physicians, and other clinically licensed professionals are obligated to protect the patient from harm, to advocate for the patient. All of this reflects a commitment to providing the highest standard of care. The question, however, is whether these high standards are reflected in the very sounds that resonate throughout the rooms and corridors of the hospital. Considering the typical hospital environment, the sounds of beepers, alarms, machines, telephones, and voices are considered usual and customary, normal to those who work there and those who watch the television shows ER, House, and Scrubs. To the confined hospitalized patient, however, the sounds of the hospital are far from normal. Depending on a patient's age, hearing acuity, medication level, culture, and fears, these sounds are foreign, are adversarial, and worsen a situation that is already difficult. Beyond difficult, however, prolonged exposure to environmental noise can increase anxiety and stress, ultimately impacting patient safety. The good news is that it is possible to address the noise issue and create an environment for patients that is not only of better quality, but also inherently safer. Let's first talk about the risks. While we can generalize about what the sound environment is and its impact, it is far more prudent to be specific as to its relationship to other compelling challenges facing every hospital today. These include privacy, confidentiality, medical and nursing errors, patient safety, staff effectiveness, and the list goes on. The sound environment holds within it verbal communication, discussion, disagreement, and agreement. It is the guardian of the dialogue between patient and nurse, between nurse and physician, between physician and family, and all other combinations of these various players. If privacy does exist, it is afforded as a result of the sound environment. Likewise, if it is threatened, the threats reside within and around what is heard and not heard, with or without intent. If we go further into the content of these various oral exchanges, which occur where people are standing, sitting, where they meet, then we can identify both the public and private information, the kind of data from which HIPAA was born. We can include fact and fiction, medical truths and myths, all the ways in which overheard third-party listeners translate and interpret what is seldomly fully understood. We can also add into these errors that occur because noise interferes with clarity, confusing names of drugs and dosages, and sometimes can confuse patient names. Privacy, confidentiality, accuracy, error, information and misinformation, anxiety and stress are all held hostage to the inappropriate noise that interferes, distracts, and agitates. Research looking at the causes of medical and nursing errors has put noise at the top of the list of causes. Speech privacy is so out of control that HIPAA privacy rule has limited its standard to reasonable efforts to protect private information. As we will see in moving on to the direct risks to patients, the impact of noise is comprehensive. Let's talk about patient risks. The motivation for studying the impact of noise on patients has come from the foundation of nursing developed by Florence Nightingale. In her Notes on Nursing, published in 1859, Nightingale clearly states that necessary noise is that which damages the patient, and further, that unnecessary noise is the cruelest absence of care. She does not ambiguously point to noise. Rather, she states that any sound or activity that arouses anticipation or expectation in the patient poses a grave risk to patient survival. In the middle of the 19th century, of course, there were few technologies to assist in nursing care. Neither pain meds, nor antidepressants, nor tranquilizers existed. Neither did anti-anxiety medications. There were few clinical interventions other than surgery. Thus, the sick room, as she referred to the patient room, was the place in which patients would either recover or die. And the condition of that room was directly related to the condition of the patient. If we move forward 150 years from 1859 to 2009, the nature of the sick room has indeed become more technological, but hardly less challenging. In a 2004 Mayo Clinic study of noise in a critical care unit, it was found that hospital noise was a primary cause of sleep deprivation and disturbance among patients. To the patient, sleep deprivation is linked to ICU psychosis, depression, slower wound healing, and increased pain and anxiety. Unnecessary noise decreases their confidence in the clinical competence of the staff, putting into question the basic consideration on the part of the hospital in general. Noise also contributes to patient falls, causes confusion, and results in increased medication and restraint use. Furthermore, noise-induced stress is contagious, impacting the attendant family member who may wind up at the nurse's station complaining about a variety of issues, each worsened by extraneous noise. Sudden noises, such as a dropped tray or slammed door, may cause a startle reflex in patients, resulting in physiological responses such as facial grimacing, muscular flexion, increased blood pressure, higher respiratory rate, increased heart rate, and vasoconstriction. Patients exposed to continuous extraneous noise can also experience altered memory, increased agitation, less tolerance for pain, and feelings of isolation. These environmentally generated symptoms are often medicated or otherwise treated in ways unrelated to their cause. People who work in noise environments for long shifts day in and day out also have similar stress-induced experiences. They report everything from exhaustion to burnout, depression, and irritability expressed at home. Interfering and distracting sounds have been shown to contribute to medical and nursing errors. The Joint Commission on the Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations, known as JACO, mentions noise as a potential risk factor related to medical and nursing errors, stating that the ambient sound environments should not exceed the level that would prohibit clinicians from clearly understanding each other. An article in the Journal of the Association of Operating Room Nurses, November 2003, reported a surgical episode in which the music was so loud that the surgeon's directions to the anesthesiologist regarding heparin levels were misunderstood by 8,000 units. Thus, beyond annoyance, within the sound environment lie potential safety risks that are often unidentified or ignored. Why noise has been and is tolerated in spite of increasing specific identified risks is a question that must be asked again and again. Other industries have clearly used noise levels as an indication of status. The lowest-cost consumer food establishments, particularly fast food restaurants, are intentionally the noisiest. The five-star restaurants that offer a full dining experience, not merely food, are designed for privacy, quiet, and sophistication to ensure that the whole experience is consistent. Furthermore, if we look at five-star hotels, the rooms are designed for privacy, and as well, their public areas are resilient to be able to handle both large groups of people and a single guest. Nonetheless, the fact that people are socializing, casual in their discussions, or protected by both anonymity and self-interest among the visitors is very different than the circumstances of patients and families who are confined and awaiting news. Most people are so engaged in their own discussions that time and concern with people that they do not know does not move up in priorities until something occurs to draw attention. Again, in a hospital, the frustration of visitors who are forced to wait hours for the outcome of surgeries or for a patient's condition to improve seeks a distraction to help the time pass. If we look further into the activities of hospitals, it is the resilience of a well-tended environment that can accommodate the patient that needs rest and can rise to the needs of a life-threatening emergency. The Environmental Protection Agency has recommended guideline values for continuous background noise at 40 decibels during the day and 35 decibels at night in patient rooms. However, a review of the literature by Ulrich and Zimring of the Center for Health Design, published in 2004, indicates that many studies have shown that noise levels in most hospitals are much higher. And as they point out, there are two general reasons why hospitals are excessively noisy. First, the noise sources are numerous and loud. They include paging systems, alarms, bed rails, telephones, staff voices, ice machines, pneumatic tubes, carts, and noises generated by roommates. Second, the hospital floors, walls, and ceilings usually are hard surfaces reflecting sound rather than absorbing it. The physics of sound also plays a role in that straight line walls, the typical hospital corridor, acts as amplifiers in moving reflected sound far past its source. This results in sounds echoing, overlapping, and lingering. A third reason why hospitals are noisy is because of the lack of specific policies that address noise. There are a few effective behavior protocols in place to not only make staff aware of noise on a continual basis, but to establish sound standards. Occasional awareness that has been considered adequate when identified noises are ongoing and have direct impact on patient outcomes, as well as related costs. In defense of the staff, if the background noise level is high, then they will automatically speak louder to be heard and be understood. However, it is also true that quiet begets quiet as much as noise begets noise. Hospitals are institutional and, for reasons of efficiency and standardization, are physically designed to be one-size-fits-all kinds of places. However, while the hospital environment is most commonly thought to be about beds, walls, windows, floors, ceilings, and technology. It involves much more. In fact, according to patient satisfaction surveys, the quality of the healthcare experience is often evaluated according to the quality of the hospital's dynamic environment, those environmental factors which are circumstantial and changeable, evidenced not only by noise, but also by light, clutter, cleanliness, odors, and hospital food. As a major component of the dynamic space, noise is one of the most invasive aspects of the hospital environment. Both casual and confidential conversations between and among patient, staff, and visitors, as well as the sounds of monitors and patient alarms, slam doors, carts that are in need of repair, phones, beepers, buzzers, and paging, they all make up the sound environment. Here is where competence, caring, compassion, and concern are qualitatively demonstrated. Therefore, leaving the sound environment to chance, or allowing it to be a random consequence of institutional care, ignores the critical ways in which patients and families experience and evaluate the quality of healthcare. So how can the sound environment of hospitals be improved? There are 10 steps to follow to make it happen.
This concludes part one of our three-part podcast series, Bringing the Healing Environment to the Bedside, 10 Steps to Improve the Sound Environment of Hospitals. You should now have a good foundation regarding the challenges of the auditory environment. We identified risks to patients posed by hospital noise and, as well, risks to staff members. We also identified root causes of hospital noise. Parts 2 and 3 introduce strategies to improve the sound environment, making such improvements operational and sustainable over time.